Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting across from me.
Beloved co-host.
My beloved co-host.
Yeah, Mike Cosentino is here. And we do want to mention that Thanksgiving does occur this week. We're going to talk about immigration this morning and other exciting things. But if we were...
Immigrants have a lot to be thankful for.
Well, maybe. We'll see how this all plays out. It's complicated. We're going to talk about this complications this morning. But
Thanksgiving is... Yeah. You call it a holiday for immigrants,
exactly.
Right? I mean, that was the whole celebrating the immigration to the United States.
That's well, yeah, I saw a cartoon.
Except for the turkeys. Yeah.
And they were rather welcoming.
Yeah.
The white Europeans coming over and refusing to learn the language and eat the food. And basically, and then the Native Americans saying, here, eat this. And
you won't starve to death.
Yeah, and then we'll be good and die and get out of your way.
It hasn't been all good. Immigration is an international problem, and I want to talk a little bit later about that. One little interesting thing, folks, that we've talked about several times, particularly Mike and I think Gary too, is about Benghazi. And it's not related to immigration, but I have never seen such hysteria and dishonesty as the phony Benghazi investigations. And now
you're about to see it with immigration.
Yes,
I think
they're going to use the same kind of nutty stuff.
Oh, exactly.
But the House committee, I guess it's a Senate committee that was controlled by Republicans. It was the House committee.
Yeah.
It was controlled by Republicans who just put out a Benghazi report, and none of the exaggerations and the stuff we've been calling lies proved out at all. I still think there's some errors in what I've seen.
But you know what that means?
Report.
That means broaden the investigation. That's what the Republicans said.
No, personally.
Just because they found nothing, that just make the investigation
worse. Personally, Mike, nothing made me more critical of the Republicans than doing something like Benghazi when Americans have been killed to try to turn this into a talking point. And now we think they're going to do this about immigration. And the problem with immigration is that it is a problem. There are 11 million unauthorized people in the United States living in the United States. And so the president, and you may have heard that he legalized illegal immigrants or something like this. None of that happened. It's a compromise. It's kind of threading the needle with what he could legally do to ease the problem for 4 million immigrants. United States, since Obama has been president of the United States, has been deporting 400,000 people a year. Mm. It's much more than ever in the past.
It's important to mention that of those 3.9 million, 4 million, half of them enter the country legally.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's not all coming across the border. And the other thing that's interesting is that two-thirds of the people who are unauthorized to live in the United States are still living here.
Right.
Arrived more than 10 years ago.
Right.
10 years ago. Before, Obama. It's not really a Democratic or Republican issue in that sense. And it's not just limited to the United States. There are immigration stressors all across Europe now. Wealthy countries are under pressure from people who are in very desperate situations to find some relief, some sort of safety. And we can talk about this whole complicated series of...
Which we are.
Of attempts to work on the immigration problem.
Did we mention that Gary LeMaster's here this morning?
We didn't mention it because we usually leave Gary.
Yeah, I prefer to be anonymous.
We kind of did that. Mike, we do this beloved co-host thing, and we just move on. But the brains of the outfit here is here with his spectacles on and getting ready to head up north for Thanksgiving.
All right, so let's just go over a few of the last things that have happened. In 2012, they're called Dreamers, but the official name of the act or the official name of the program is Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals. And this is the first thing that the Obama administration does. And it said that young adults brought to the United States illegally as children can apply for temporary relief and stay in the United States. It affected about 1.5 million young people. And there was a drop-off age, I think, at 30. If you were over 30, it didn't apply to you. And then in 2014, what he's done is he's unauthorized parents. These are the main categories, folks. It's not the complete story. And Michael and Gary will talk to you about some of the stuff going on in Silicon Valley, etc. Unauthorized parents of U.S. citizens and legal residents are shielded from deportation and allowed to work legally. The DACA program, the Dreamer program, has been expanded, but the parents of DACA children, children who were brought here without authorization before when they were young, they're not protected under the new plan. As the administration has been saying, there's been a huge number of executive actions about immigration. There was one in 1961. Kennedy authorized the Department of Health and Education and Welfare to establish a formal program to assist Cuban refugees. 75 and 79, Vietnamese. 1980, Cuban and Haitian refugees were admitted to the country against the thing. In 87, Nicaraguan refugees, Reagan allowed them in. In 1987, now, in 1986, there was an actual bill, which Republicans now call an amnesty bill, that was passed under Reagan that legalized the status of a whole lot of people. But Reagan also signed another executive action that legalized the minor children of parents who had received the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act protected. So usually you need to modify things that you do. And I could go on and on, but the history of executive actions and about immigration is very long. The history of American immigration law is a head ringer, folks. We're still operating in part on the Immigration Naturalization Act of 1952. Of all American laws, this is one of the most complicated, crazy, and dysfunctional. But it worked to a degree for many, many years. It was modified in 1996. Harsh punishments for being in the country, illegal limitations, and so forth and so on. 2001, I'm reading off a list, folks, Bush and Vicente Fox, president of Mexico, were about to cut a deal on Mexican immigration when 9/11 happened. 2004, Kennedy and McCain introduced a bill. 2006, Senate and House bills, very different, never come to a vote. 2007 bipartisan Senate bill is filibustered. 2013 comprehensive immigration reform is passed by the Senate and the House does nothing at all.
The political landscape is littered with immigration reform that never happened.
Indeed, Mike, and that's why the president's acted, because it's this long, complicated, interwoven batch of both executive actions changing things and law changing things. Now, one of the things you're going to hear is that the president has legalized people. He hasn't legalized their status. Nothing he's done is permanent. It's for 3 years. It could be undone by the next president. We still need comprehensive immigration reform, right,
exactly.
Mike? Isn't that the key? I mean, this is a stopgap measure that will provide security for a lot of people. It will bring them out of the shadows, have them pay taxes, and so forth and so on.
Exactly. And the tax issues is a huge. I do want to say that it's normal to be conflicted about immigration.
I think so.
That's a normal thing.
And as I said earlier, Mike, it's not just in the United States. And I've been reading up on the conflict in Europe. And Europe has very different problems than we do and different in different decades, it has different problems. The problem they're debating a lot now is, first, just illegal people coming in from Eastern Europe. And just like the most of the young kids, now, if everybody knows that the number of young children coming across the border has dropped into, I don't know, a tenth or a twentieth, what it was when everybody got hysterical about it. But they're having the same kind of problem with people coming, say, from Somalia, places of conflict, places where, like Nicaragua, the government is basically broken down. People are fleeing poverty and violence, either state-initiated or by gangs, just like the United States.
I was going to say, that's the same kind. We face a lot of that type of immigration. In that vein, I want to mention the Krugman approach. Paul Krugman, Nobel Prize-winning economist, his take is that it's common human decency to for what Obama did. The recognition that half of the immigrants are children and came here legally. They were brought by either through the decision of their parents, or they came across the border legally, or were born here.
Or they were born.
They were born here.
So they're American citizens, but their parents are not.
This allows
their parents to legally work here.
This is who we're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
97,000 people are affected in Arizona. 97,000.
So that's
the statistics I've got on it.
So the question is, you know, what do you do about these people and their families? We can build some fences. The Republic talks about, secure the border first, but they also say that the tallest fence isn't going to fix this problem.
The Great Wall didn't work particularly well, and neither did the Berlin Wall. And this is almost on the scale of the Great Wall.
And it is. It is.
And we have 21,000 border agents right now.
I think it's the largest police force in the country.
It is the Border Patrol. So how many more can we afford to send there?
They've been doubling the amount spent on the Border Patrol now every, 5 years for 15 years, including under the Obama administration. So, you know, how many enforcement agents can... All right, so they can afford to deport only about 400,000 people. And what this law says is that instead of randomly picking up some guy, you know, he's on his way to the Walmart, and you stop his car and he doesn't have any papers and you deport him, you have to focus on people who commit crimes. So I think that a lot, we were talking before, I think that's going to cut down the number of people deported, because it's much harder to find criminals, you know, and deport them than it is just to grab some guy off the street. A lot of what the Republicans want is this, see, folks, honestly, they're never going to deport these 11 million people. But the Republican position is that the 11 million people should live under the random threat of being deported. Now, what good does that do?
No, I think there are people on the other side that want to round up these people, including the children.
I think they want to.
Even though they live in a country that they don't know any other country, they never lived in any other country, they've lived here, and send them somewhere. That there are people that want to do that. This people that want to be this cruel to children and families. And this is what Krugman wrote his article after visiting the New York Tenement Museum. And you know, once again, being a nation of immigrants, today's immigrant children are tomorrow's workers and employees and friends and neighbors. They are today's friends and neighbors. That's what I can't get over. I guess a lot of people live. I guess it's like a lot of neighborhoods in the United States, you could live and never see a brown or a black person. Not my experience. My experience in Arizona is the immigrants, both adults and children, and maybe it's because of my association with education for so long, whatever it is, these are friends and neighbors and people I know and have meals with, and yet their status is, depending on who you're talking, depending on which politician wants to decide their fate, is either so uncertain what happened in the past is under FDR, even under Ronald Reagan, when immigration statuses were made clear for families, those families were able to lift themselves out
of this. But, Mike, even before there was the laws about immigrants and the country was open, the English colonists did not like the Scots-Irish. They hated them. They had a whole long list of...
Well, the Italians were genetically inferior.
Of really bad characteristics the Scots-Irish had. They were crude. They were violent. They were uneducated.
We've done the same thing to Germans when they arrived.
Exactly.
We did the same thing to Scandinavians when they arrived.
Yep. Italians.
Pick a group.
Jews.
I'd like to throw out a couple of statistics to put things into a little perspective. And when you talk about rounding up and deporting 11 million people, one little thing that never gets reported is that those people are currently paying taxes through payroll deductions and Social Security and Medicare. They contribute. This is just as near as they can tell. They contribute about $7 billion a year in Social Security or payroll deductions for Social Security and Medicare. So if you're going to round up 11 million people, not only is that going to cost a dramatic amount of money, but you're going to lose.
It would throw the country into recession,
serious recession.
That we're just escaping. But the argument in Europe is sort of the same. The business community tends to support immigration because I know that, folks, this is a complicated argument, but immigration is good for business. And so all over Europe, you have the business elite supporting immigration, and you have a rise of right-wing groups who oppose it. Because when immigrants come in and they speak a different language and they look different than you and they do things differently and they have different food and clothes or whatever it is, it feels a little bit like death, like your culture's changing, like it's not going to be the culture that you grew up in. But this is the history of the whole world is change. And dealing with that change. So I'm not one of these people who beats up and knocks on any immigrant people in the sense. I understand the fears that people have that their way of life will somehow be changed. But it is the way of the future. I mean, the world is getting smaller and smaller, right, Gary?
Well, that fear is driven by politics. You know, I think it's undeniable that one party over the past, 20 plus 30, 40 years has used this issue to scare people, to force people to get out and vote, be afraid of the person next door, be afraid of your coworkers. It's something that, McCain used it, to the nth degree in 2010.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's something that, build the dang fence, finish the dang fence. It's completely fear driven and the percentage of criminals that come across. I mean, certainly we need to be able to control the border. I don't think anybody's arguing
that. If you
can't
control a border, you can't have a nation state. So the question is, if you want to have nation states, you've got to be able to control your borders in some sense. In Europe, what's happening is that if you live in the EU, European Union, you have a right to sort of move and work pretty much anywhere and get benefits from anywhere else in the Union. And that's setting up all kinds of problems because they're actually still separate countries, not separate states. So when Arizona tries to have its own immigration policy, it's just unconstitutional. If Italy changes its policy, it's signed on to a lot of things saying that it will do this and that, but it still has a much more control. It's still a separate country, even though it's part of a treaty group with the very extensive treaties and rules and stuff.
Well, the fact was that there were, I lived on the Canadian border and I've been to the Mexican border and there were roads. That wandered across both borders, unguarded, unsecured, and nobody worried about it until until the last, until since, until 9/11.
People lived on both sides of the borders. I think you can go out, folks, and just talk to people who lived on the borders like 30, 40 years ago. And the borders were pretty much open wherever you were.
But before it gets much later, I want to mention, because we're going to talk about it eventually, that, because Republicans have admitted that this is all about impeachment. That they some people would say they knew that if they passed immigration reform, then Obama would not have done this executive order.
Because immigration reform.
And so for the next 2 years, there's going to be absolutely no movement again in Washington. Not that there's been any anyway, but we're going to waste the next 2 years trying to impeach Obama.
President is right. If you don't like his limited executive actions, pass a comprehensive immigration reform bill.
Well,
we can't go on decade after decade with nothing happening and the Congress all jammed up and filibusters and harassment and changes. It just goes on and on and on. So it would be better if Congress would act and pass a comprehensive immigration reform.
The House has had more than 500 days to bring the Senate bill up for a vote, and Boehner absolutely refused to do it.
And so, the Senate bill was a bipartisan compromise, folks, that didn't give anybody exactly what they wanted on the immigration debate. And the House never took it up. Now they're threatening to take up little strange piecemeal bills and pass them for political purposes. But that's not the same thing. You know, you need a comprehensive solution.
How about
something
this?
That addresses all the different aspects, right, Mike?
We were hoping to have somebody to interview this morning. So I'm going to interview you, Steve. Business supports, by and large, immigration reform.
Yes.
Obama just enacted immigration reform.
Yes.
Peace, such as it is. And
yes,
as you said, it's not.
The Republican vote, I'd say, Mike, I don't want to be too cynical, the Republican vote in the Senate for immigration reform was a lot because the business community wanted them, certain of the senators, to do that.
Then why won't the House do it? Why won't the House respond to its most,
There's populist. Well, look at Europe. The business community in Europe has one approach to things, which is very staid and very much economically oriented. They want, you know, in other words, the population of Italy is going down. So they're not really thrilled by keeping people out because then their population is going to drop. But there are these nationalistic movements. And it's all, to me, Mike, it's all them and us. They look different than we do. I mean, really, the English did not like the Scots-Irish, and we can't even tell them apart nowadays. So, and there's been that history of know-nothingism in the United States and pretty much everywhere else. And so, you know, if if you look at the largest number of immigrants, I guess, are in France. And, you know, there are many of them are different religion. There are 4.5 million Muslims now in France, 8% of the population, 4% of their population in Germany. It's a different religion. It's a different culture. It's hard to assimilate. It's hard to connect up and work out all the compromises of daily life with people who are different than you are. But if you look around us as individuals, I look at you, you're very different than I am, and, you know.
And thank God.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I think that needs to be said with regard to immigration is a lot of it is driven by the actions of governments and large corporations and by wars. You know, you have all these displaced people. One of the things that's driving the illegal immigration across our southern border is that when NAFTA and CAFTA were passed, the large corporations and the ag businesses in the U.S. started dumping huge amounts of cheap corn into Mexico and Central America, which are, you know, corn is one of their primary, it's not one, it's their primary staple. What that did was
had the same effect in Mexico and Central America as these huge industrial farms had on family farmers in the United States.
Right.
It happened here first.
It collapsed their farming economies. And so those, you know, small farmers could no longer make a living on the land, so they moved into the cities in hopes of finding jobs, and there were none. And so then they started looking northward, and you know, they were given a choice. You know, I ask you what you would do if you can't make a living and feed your family any other way, and you can go across the border and have hope of getting income in a job. What would you do? And the other issue that
and it's a worldwide issue, right?
Right.
I mean, this is what happened with, you know, you'll read about occasionally or see on the news, folks, that hundreds of illegal immigrants or unauthorized people trying to arrive in Italy or the south of France and drowning in boats and these cheap boats and stuff.
And
once happened here with Cubans and Haitians, the same people drowning on the way, willing to take incredible risks to get somewhere.
Because they've got nothing to lose. And the other issue I think needs to be brought up is this last year's inundation of our borders with kids from Honduras and El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua.
Not really Nicaragua.
The other three. And these are states that are basically failed states, and the U.S. has had a lot to do with that over the years, going back to the big fruit companies and the so-called banana republics. And it's, you know, continued through the Reagan administration with the death squads in those countries. And, you know, there are basically failed governments, and these kids were under threat. And so they weren't trying to sneak across the border. They were coming to the border patrol stations and turning themselves in hopes of being.
But conservatives would say that would be because we have lax immigration laws, that they can turn themselves in, and we have this bureaucratic justice system where you have to give them a hearing before you can deport them.
Again, I ask you what you would do if you felt that your child was about to be killed or raped or, you know, otherwise harmed, and you had an alternative. What would you do?
As an American, that not only what would you do, Gary, but what should we do? We should accept them. We should help them. I mean, you know, just as you would any neighbor. The failure to act on the House of Representatives, the Republican-controlled House, has been destructive and self-destructive, I think. And this, I saw this in an article somewhere, and I can't remember.
I can't remember the article you read either, Mike.
Well, I mean, I remember the article, but I'm trying to remember where I can't cite the author is all I'm worried about. But I have the information. The idea is that the failure to act is self-destructive, both economically. You were talking about Europe and that their actions, as complicated and convoluted as they are, at least eventually, even though they may be staid and conservative, eventually are at least made from an economic driver rather than some sort of bigoted driver over fear. We talk about the politics of fear in the United States. I'm not sure. I'm guessing that at least for this issue, it's better than the politics.
In the National Front in France, anti-immigrant, I've forgotten what they call the party, the Independence Party in Britain, anti-immigrant. Those folks claim if you had a referendum, like in Switzerland, you'd have an anti-immigrant
policies,
referendum
more policies,
passed.
Anti-immigrant.
And so there is a mass movement are people who are afraid of the immigration, who don't understand it, or the question I would have, guys, and I know that nobody has an answer to this, is this occurs. So it's, you know, the old butterfly moves its wings, but, you know, you have a collapse in Honduras of a state. You have this grinding poverty. You have all these violent gangs, and the kids end up in the United States. And in Somalia, you have an endless civil war of people killing each other. And some of the people are granted refugees, and some of them just flee to Europe like they almost don't it's not they don't care whether they make it. They were willing to take incredible chances in leaky boats to make it to Europe where they can have a decent life. What do you do about it? I mean, the whole world is so interconnected that when we let these countries go, when we have this extreme poverty and disorganization in some countries, and then we have, like in Europe, this attractive, it's like a giant grocery store or department store of social benefits and goodies and job protection and everything else, much more than the United States, it's going to draw people, right? Legally, or who get authorized to come, like they're refugees, and also unauthorized.
So you want
people.
Us to solve the immigration problem in Europe,
when as we, well as when, the U.S.
We,
yes,
we'd rather. Today's show is talking about the immigration problem in the United States, and we're not going to be able to solve that.
In answer, though, I don't want to put all the responsibility on the shoulders of large, greedy multinational corporations. But they bear a great deal of responsibility for it, as well as our own foreign policies that these multinationals have tended to view, you know, other countries and populations as markets for their goods and a kind of a storehouse of resources. So very often they go into other countries and buy off politicians and take resources out of those countries and give them virtually nothing in return.
They would argue with the nothing in return.
Let's go back 1 second, Mike, and this
low-paying jobs.
We have
11
million unauthorized people in the United States living without authorization. There are different figures, but I'll take the correction. 4 million of them are affected by this new rule. It's not permanent. It doesn't legally change their status. We have 97,000 people that is the estimate of the Arizona Republic going to be affected in Arizona. So right. It's a big change, but it's a complex and varied one, right?
Yes, it is that. One of the, and we mentioned this at the top of the show. We didn't do much explaining of the bill. The executive decision. But one of the things it's going to do is look for your criminal status is huge. One of the commentator was talking about how there's a cottage industry opening up in North Las Vegas of pretty much bogus people willing to take money from immigrants to help them understand and help them work through and hopefully get their status legalized or under the Obama decision. But they're not. Very often they are just sham artists. So you have to be really careful. The suggestion, the upshot of the show was find somebody. The decision is complicated. You probably are going to need help. Find somebody reputable to help you and not somebody on the street that hung out a sign that says, oh, by the way, I'm a notary and I can help you get legal status. I do want to talk about how this decision, the Silicon Valley lobby, FWD.us, is the Facebook, Google, and LinkedIn lobby that's been lobbying for immigration reform. And this decision did almost nothing to impact that. But they see this as a springboard to what they want. And, of course, what they want is longer stays. They want to be able to recruit coders. They want to be able to recruit skilled people for longer periods of time, have easier access. And, of course, those that are already here say, well, they want to do that to drive down wages so they don't have to pay as much for the relatively small pool that's here. And maybe Zuckerman and crew, this immigration reform lobby was led by Mark Zuckerman.
They want
Zuckerberg.
To have
and Zuckerberg. Let me get his name.
One
right.
of the things that's not been talked about is that the bill does liberalize many aspects of so corporations like Mike is talking about, particularly who need engineers, software engineers, technical engineers of all kinds. Want to have a much more generous allowance of these people in the United States to work in their businesses. And there are all kinds of catches. So You're a graduate student. You come to the U.S. Your wife comes to the U.S. You have a full scholarship at Berkeley or somewhere. She can't work.
Right.
She can't work.
Right.
Or your husband can't work if you have the scholarship. So there's dozens of these things. And what they're saying in Silicon Valley, this is really just what you were saying, it's not really what they want. But listen, folks, that has to be changed by law just like the other thing. In other words, there has to be comprehensive immigration reform. If you want to have, 100,000 engineers enter the country a year, you have to change the law. It's one thing to liberalize interpretations and to thread through things and improve things here and there and cut some of the red tape. But it's another to really solve the problem, and to really solve the problem, you've got to have comprehensive immigration reform.
As long as we're talking about the effects on business, I'd like to bring up a couple of stats I found kind of astounding. Is that?
And I'm just going to get this in. I want to hear this because I know what you're going to say. FWD.US, the Silicon Valley lobby, says they are going to keep pushing for immigration reform, but the opinion is that there's already difficult task has not been made any easier by Obama's executive decision. You're right. They still need what they need. This isn't going to make it. It's going to make it harder.
But I don't think I agree with that. The stuff I've seen says it's making it easier. At least the articles in the newspaper.
I hope that's
true. No, they're not.
I'm giving their opinion. I agree with you.
They're not thrilled, but it will help them get engineers. It's just, like the rest of the law, it's temporary.
They want it permanent, and they want it black and white.
They want it permanent. They want it written in the law. And
right.
They want no big thing, and they want to be able to apply for
clear it up.
They want their people to be able to apply for visas and stay longer.
That's right.
So this helps, but I don't know. It doesn't solve it, Gary.
The thing I wanted to bring up is that just to put some things in perspective with business and trade. 6 million U.S. jobs depend on exports to Mexico. If we just look
just
at
Mexico.
Just Mexico. 6 million U.S. jobs. The U.S. receives nearly $9 billion in Mexican tourism. And so, Mexico is a huge trading partner. What we've done is basically point all of the problems at Mexico and blame Mexico for all the issues. Mm. A couple of other stats, more than $1 billion in goods cross the border each day. Nearly 700,000 Mexicans cross into the United States legally each day. And nearly as many Americans cross the border into Mexico legally each day. But the thing I found really astounding, all of this made me look up what is Arizona's take on this.
Yeah, what's our take?
What
how much of this
what
we
portion,
get?
Since we passed SB 1070,
yeah,
our take has dropped dramatically.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Arizona ranks, we're one of the few states on the border. We rank 21st out of all of the states in the United States and exports to Mexico. We rank behind Wisconsin and Minnesota. we're 21st.
That's amazing.
We're not 49th.
Texas leads by a long ways, and California is second, and then it drops off the map. We have all these economic opportunities being on the border with Mexico. And what we keep doing is poking them with a sharp stick.
That was Fred Duvall's big point. The Democratic candidate for governor was that we could turn Arizona economy around almost solely, on improving our status with Mexico.
And if you go to the, if you.
And I believe he lost votes rather than gained votes.
Right.
People sit there and say, well, this makes sense. Common sense people. But other people say, well, he wants to.
But look at Gary's statistics: 700,000 people going back and forth, billions of dollars worth of goods going back and forth. So it's going to be very, very hard to stop immigrants with the big wall. Right. And it's going to be very, very hard to stop drugs and other contraband from coming in. It's always going to be a difficult job. There is just so much movement. The best thing that could happen would be a deeper, better relationship with a solid Mexican government.
Work with the government.
I got an email from a conservative newsletter guy within the last year, and he asked, and I think it was indicative of how much of the country people believe that the Arizona-Mexico border is like a war zone. It's like an occupied border, and in some ways it is, but in many ways it still isn't. Like you say, people going back and forth all the time. They're going to work. They're going for vacations. They're going for
shopping
at the resorts. They're going to shop and it's this sort of pleasant area that's a little warmer right now, certainly than Buffalo. And so I had to. I said, please come down. I wish we had somebody could do a 24-hour like they used to do when they first started the internet. Just put half a dozen cameras down there and show the country that it's pretty much normal life down there. Drug cartels aren't shooting people on the street. Things happen, but
drive down to Douglas sometime. I was down there last year again, and what you see on the U.S. side of the border is a lot of businesses that are boarded up.
Yes.
Because it's become too difficult for
right. You know, it takes 4 hours to get across the border.
Right. So, a lot of their business, relied on people from Mexico, and now it's dropped off dramatically. Moreover, when you drive around that area, you will inevitably run into Border Patrol checkpoints.
Right.
And you can have U.S. plates on your car. You can be a tourist yourself and be pulled over and asked to, a variety of questions or possibly have your car searched and your person searched. It's really made things difficult on for some of our citizens on this side of the border, not because of the illegal immigration, but because of our response to it.
And there's a big protest, I think. What is the town south of Tucson? They have a border checkpoint there.
Nogales, is it?
No, up further. Away from the border. Green Valley area. It's in the Green Valley area, and there's a huge fight because local Green Valleyans get stopped by the Border Patrol.
Oh, right. If they're,
They're nice white Americans, and they have now got a campaign to take out the border checkpoint.
Well, at least they're not profiling, as long as they're stopping. But seriously, folks, get a hold of Krugman's article, where he talks about the human decency of Obama's decision on, immigration reform. Let's see. We got Democrats at Red Rocks, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, Jose Vargas, outed himself as an undocumented immigrant in New York Times magazine.
He didn't know he was undocumented until he was 15, 16 years old, and he went to apply for a driver's license. He thought he was a citizen the whole time.
Yeah,
apply, and he finds out that he doesn't have any legal papers.
On November 25th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Sedona Public Library, admission is free. You can see the Door movie, November 25th, 6 o'clock, at the library. This is co-sponsored by the Northern Arizona Interfaith Council, and Diana Williamson is going to be the moderator. Diana works with the Interfaith Council and spend some time. If I was going to this movie, which I am, and I'm hoping to talk to Diana and get some firsthand information on working with Northern Arizona immigrants and seeing how some of these organizations handle it.
She has lots of great anecdotes about working with folks here.
Please.
So just a couple of points, folks. One, this is what the president has done is not comprehensive immigration reform. Comprehensive immigration reform has got to be a compromise. It's got to look something like the Senate bill, and it still has not happened.
Right.
This is a good move by the president. It's a brave move, but it's not a long-term solution.
Helps a lot of children. But the Republicans will use it as a springboard for impeachment. The politics are going to happen. Thank you, folks. Thank you to Democrats of the Red Rocks.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
pvid.org. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.